So as you mentioned, the four items, the annual report, the proposed FTA agency safety plan, the FTA corrective action plan reconciliation, and the red light, I'm sorry, the red signal.
Red signal violation.
Update. Okay. First of all, let me start out with the annual report. As you all well know, we have two key performance indicators that are followed by WMATA, and I'll get into the details. Just a reminder, the target employee injury rate is 4.6 injuries per 200,000, and the target customer injury rate is 1.8 injuries per 1 million passenger trips, so keep that in the back of your mind. We also have transitioned in this past year from the Tri-State Oversight Committee to the FTA, and we're still going through transition with that and adjusting our policies and procedures to reflect that change. We have conducted a number of employee surveys. We're working in cooperation with the customer service and communications group to drill down to understand the true issues in safety with our employees and also with our customers. And then many external and internal safety audits and inspections, many of which you've been seeing in the newspaper even in the last several days. Okay, moving on to the next slide. I apologize, not a good news story. The employee injury rate for calendar year 2015 was 5.30. It's a 27% increase over last year's 4.18 injuries per 200,000 man hours worked. It's essentially equivalent to 100 employees working for a year. And below just keep in mind, it is below what the Bureau of Labor Statistics average for transit industries would be. There were 625 Occupational Safety and Health Administration recordable employee injuries in 2015, calendar year 2015. That's 132 more than in calendar year 2014. This is the first time since calendar year 2010 that WMATA did not meet the employee injury rate target of 4.6. A little different story on the customer injury rate side. For calendar year 2015, the rate was 2.05. Although overall a low rate, it did not meet the target of 1.8 injuries per million passenger trips, and it's higher than the calendar year 2014 rate of 1.97. Also keep in mind that the rate was a result of a higher number of rail customer injuries while on board, largely driven by the January 12, 2015 LaFont incident, which resulted in 69 customer injuries and one fatality. There were 682 National Transit Database reportable customer injuries in calendar year 2015, which works out to be 84 more than permissible to have achieved the target rate. Next slide, please. So what we do in safety is we try to understand, is this an anomaly here? Is this indicative of a trend that is not good news? So we have looked at the last 6 years of data, and they are posted on the chart, and along with that is drawn a trend line. And the good news still is that the employee injury rate trend line is downward, even though we had a not-so-good year in 2015. And the other news, is, I wouldn't say it's necessarily good news, is we haven't been real successful in changing the trend line for the customer injury rate. It's been flat. And later on in my presentation, I'll get into the steps that we're taking to try to change that. Next slide, please. So drilling down into the employee injury rate and trying to find out what are the driving forces behind those, still the number one cause of employee injuries is slips, trips, and falls. And relating back to the safety contact that I gave, we have, as I called it, the proof in the pudding. When we train our employees in body mechanics and slips, trips, and falls, the groups that have received that training, as I mentioned in my safety contact, had a 33% lower injury rate. And so what we really need to do is to work hard to expand out that training and educate our employees in that one particular one, slips, trips, and falls. And that's really an individual responsibility kind of thing. not only are we find our customers are in a rush, but our employees seem to be in a rush also. And when that happens and you don't hold handrails on stairs or you, you know, hurry across a parking lot, not such good things can happen. And I will go into more detail into the driving forces behind these increases in the next couple slides, and also the measures that are being taken to mitigate those. If I could have the next slide, please. So the key drivers, and I know this at first blush looks alarming because with the crime-related incidents, keep in mind we're talking specifically injuries. This is not saying that crimes are up 84%, but that we have overall the difference between calendar year 2014 and 2015, we had an increase. That 84% comes from an increase of 46 injuries. An interesting fact with that is that more than half of those, or 26 of those injuries tied to crime-related incidents, are due to stress. And so that's, I think I maybe have mentioned this in a previous meeting, it's a good news, bad news story. We have an employee assistance program, and we've really been publicizing that. And so when an employee is involved in a crime-related incident, and they go to our medical unit and mention that they're stressed by that event, then they're referred to our employee assistance program. So that's good news. They're getting the treatment that they should be getting, whereas in the past, I don't necessarily know that those kind of injuries were addressed properly. But it does drive the statistics up. So as I mentioned, the increase in 2015 over 2014, more than half of that increase is due to stress-related claims by employees. And so I don't necessarily take that as bad news, because I think we're addressing the concerns of our employees. Next is the smoke exposure, and obviously that's tied to the January 12th incident, the majority of those, 23 injuries. A number of things have gone on in working with the National Transportation Safety Board. Early action items that have been taken with looking at the ventilation systems, the Rail Operations Control Center procedures, and a number of mitigations have been put in place and all well publicized. So I think we're well on the way to mitigating those kind of circumstances, again, that led to those 23 injuries in 2015. ICE-related, we did have a 105% increase, 21 more injuries over 2014. However, SAFE has partnered with customer service and communications and purchased 3,000 of what we call gripper units. They're sort of, in the old days we called them rubbers that went over your regular shoes, but these have like a cleat attached to them. We've distributed 1,500 to rail and 1,500 to bus, and I think some of the results that we're getting in 2016 with the blizzard, given all the effort that went on with snowstorm blizzard Jonas, it was a relatively low number of slips, trips, and falls related to that. So I think we're on the right path with at least with the ice related and snow related with the grippers that we're distributing, and educating employees on slips, trips, and falls. There's a new video, videos actually, that bus and rail have put together that are excellent, that show how to conduct yourself when working in an icy environment. Continuing on, because it wouldn't fit on one page, some of the key drivers, the inattention, and in particular hand tool use, and I think this there were 9 more injuries, 100% increase, over 2014, and this is really boils down to training of the employees in the proper usage of these, and noticing these in our internal safety audits and doing compliance checks. And I think working with the departments, working with rail, and working with bus, and making sure employees don't take shortcuts. And I have an overall comment when we get done here. And then the non-preventable collisions. We have the National Safety Council course on driver training, and there are a number of systems maintenance inspection audit items, two in particular, one on bus refresher training and one on supervisors assessing operator performance, that I believe will address the non-preventable collisions. So they're already covered by the FTA SMI, and that's now just starting to roll out, and I think we're going to see some progress there. Before I leave employee injuries, I guess this is just my takeaway on it, and I know we had some good years. Last year was not necessarily a good year, and in my mind, in past lives that I've worked in, one of the number one challenges for safety is complacency, and we're doing our best efforts to get the word out to employees. Just because things are going well doesn't mean you can let your guard down. You have to be constantly vigilant. And I think this is true in many industries where routine takes over and you're used to the norm, you're sort of in an automatic mode, and then something happens that's not the norm, and you don't necessarily kick in the resources that you need to kick in to address that situation, mainly because you're, the term is complacent, that everything is going to be fine. And I know in aviation, pilots have flown planes into the ground because of that. Okay, let me move on to customer injuries. So we do have that there. Again, the number one, just like employees, is slips, trips, and falls. They equate to 50% of our injuries. The overall rate is up for 2015. However, 69 of the customer injuries were on board rail, which were tied to the Lafont Plaza incident. So actually, if you back that out, everything else is pretty much improved over 2014. The facility, rail facility, the vertical transportation, the collision and non-collision related bus, and the collision and non-collision related metro access are all improved numbers over calendar year 2014. We are partnering with customer service and communications to try to find new ways to get the words out to help our customers safely navigate our system. We move on to the key drivers. So the collision related are the first that I want to talk about. Majority are coming from non-preventable collisions. But we are trying to, we have implemented the driver's defensive driver training, and we've expanded the training to address those issues. Slips, trips, and falls, majority coming from hard braking events and maneuvering through traffic for the bus customer injuries. Again, the defensive driving and training. And I had mentioned also bus safety has partnered with media. We're targeting certain routes that had more customer injuries. And we've experimented with using different colored hand signs with safety messages to see how we can make customers more aware of safe riding policies. In addition, we have handed out a number of items and informational pamphlets to help educate our customers. Moving on to the rail customer injury rate, and I think I already alluded to this, the onboard injuries are the real driver on this from the 69 increase specifically due to the Lafont Plaza. So there were an additional 9 increase that were not Lafont Plaza that are driving that rate. In the vertical transportation, being driven by the slips, trips, and falls, and the action, the customer outreach that I mentioned that we're doing on the bus side, we're doing something similar on the rail side, in particular for escalator injuries. And the rail facilities, again, the slips, trips, and falls are a challenge. The way we're removing snow and ice has been addressed, and we're making changes there. And again, the customer outreach. And then lastly, the onboard, as I mentioned, the improvements due to the NTSB and FTA SMI, and some of the early action items, I think, are working on that. Specifically, the safety department has partnered with the customer group for improving the education and awareness. We've increased what we call safety blitzes to participate at stations with a focus on escalator injuries. And we're partnering with rail transportation and looking into the placement of platform monitors to better control crowding situations and safe movement of customers at specific hotspot stations. So the key accomplishments, we have closed a total of 25 of the 29 National Transportation Safety Board recommendations. And of the four older ones that are still remaining, they have been submitted, various, whether for closure or for a status update. And so we're up to date and I think in good shape with NTSB. Some early indication that we may see some movement on two of those here in the near term. I don't want to specifically say because it's you count your chickens before they're hatched. It's not a good thing. Introduction of the into service of the 7000 series rail cars. We work very closely, safety department, in the safety certification. It's unprecedented in my knowledge of the nation, of the effort that's been gone through to get these vehicles delivered to our system safely. We've conducted 21 internal safety audits and generated over 30% of all new CAPs. I think I had mentioned that before, and I'll allude to that when we get into the CAP discussion, that many, many of these come from our own internal accident incident investigations and our own internal safety reviews. And I also mentioned that we have completed the safety certification and the opening of the Phase 1 Silver Line. There were items that spilled over into 2015, so those have been wrapped up. And we have closed 95 corrective action plans that were all from the time of the TOC. In addition, over 60 accident incident investigations have been completed and accepted and or approved by, this was while we were still under the jurisdiction of the TOC. One that I will mention on the NTSB, the oldest one that we have, and it's also the oldest corrective action, is roadway worker warning protection. And that stems from NTSB recommendation 08004. And we've been in constant communication with the NTSB. If you may recall, they're looking for a technology solution to solve the roadway worker issue. And we have been actively pursuing a technology solution. There is no, I guess you'd call it silver bullet that solves everything. There are some systems that are much more infrastructure heavy that would have a long lead time and a large cost to implement. We're looking for something that satisfies what the NTSB is looking for, but yet we'll hold the cost down and we can get implemented as quickly as possible. Some interesting ones, and this is just my take on it, are ones that are GPS-based. However, they only work above ground. They don't work in the tunnels as of yet. I think once we get the new system neutral host in the tunnels, there's a possibility that may have some feasibility. But we are pursuing to see whether we can at least get that piece of the system above ground where, sadly to say, the majority of the roadway worker fatalities that occurred prior to 2010 had occurred above ground. So if we can attack that piece by piece and as technology evolves, tackle the entire problem. Okay, another list of accomplishments. We've completed 76% of all the safety hotline calls, hosted 7 DOT Transportation Safety Institute classes. And along those lines, I will also mention FTA has been, we work very closely with FTA to get those folks through the transportation safety classes too. So they've been aggressively pursuing that route. Good news, I think we had, last month or 2 months ago, we announced that the close call reporting system is being expanded to bus. SAFE has a representative on that team, and I believe, I don't want to preempt, but I believe the actual rollout for input is in April. Continued implementation of fatigue risk management. It's just a reminder that WMATA is ahead of the curve for the transit industry. I believe we're the first that have the full implementation of a fatigue risk management policy and implementation. And so I want to thank the partners in rail transportation and in bus for a very successful implementation of this. The numbers of not adhering to the policy have gone way down. In fact, it's a real good news story. And I don't want to preempt because I believe that's on the agenda for the March Safety and Security Committee board meeting. So we'll be happy to give you the full update on the good news story on fatigue risk management. And lastly, we have our own internal SafeStat, which is equivalent to the Transit Police MetroStat. the right term, where we look at the data and we look for hotspots. It's data-driven. Where are the injuries occurring? Where can we focus our resources? What lessons learned can come from those locations, those accidents, those incidents, and deploy resources to try to get our arms around the situation and come up with the proper mitigations. Okay, let me move on quickly and in the interest of time.
Why don't we stop here and just talk a little about the 2015 safety report first and then move on to the two FTA type items. Let me just kick it off by saying that as I look at the data, I'm more concerned about the employee injury rate for 2015 than the customer injury rate, because as you pointed out, the customer injury rate, though higher than our target, seems to reflect the peak of the January L'Enfant smoke incident, and otherwise we're sort of below target. But the employee injury rate is both above target, and it seems to be more systemic, more across the board as a problem in the agency. And as you've pointed out, or to use your words, there's an indication of some complacency. And you can see this in some of the charts that you indicated. You know, both the ice-related, the slips and falls seems to be a big part of this. The tools, the inattention to tool use, and the thing we'll talk about later on the red line violations, the seemingly concern that it reflects a lot of inattention on the part of the rail operators. And so I'm just wondering, since this is more across the board rather than stovepipe to different job descriptions, what we're doing or what you're recommending be done to sort of increase the level of awareness or job commitment or alertness on the part of our employees across a broad range of the types of jobs that they perform?
So maybe a short answer is, and that was my term about the complacency. I don't want to necessarily say that's a judgment.
No, I want to adopt it because it's my judgment.
It's an observation. I think what it reminds us, and I can get into it with the red signal violation, we seem to go through these hills and valleys. And so we have a peak, and some of the mitigations that we do, we work with rail transportation. We pull all the affected operators in. We have what we call a stand down. We hear each one's story, what they felt happened, what put them in that circumstance. And many of them are admitting it, but it's oftentimes the circumstances, I call it not the norm. So it's not routine operations, but they are operating in an automatic mode kind of thing in their brain of what's routine, and they're not necessarily fully prepared for the circumstances. And so we'll pull those folks together. For instance, in red signal violations, do a heightened awareness, do a campaign to all operators, and they'll dry up for a while, for many months oftentimes. We had, I can't recall when the last peak was, maybe 2 years ago, and then they seem to almost go away. And then we slide back into that mode again. And I think the lesson learned is there's a frequency to be followed here that we need to keep reminding folks of the proper practices and the lessons learned from these things so that we don't slide back into old habits. And we keep that at the front burner and keep our awareness up. And that's just an example, but I think that falls into across the board is the human element. And in many of the other modes of transportation that I've worked in before, we're all human. So we are all apt to make mistakes. We're not perfect. And the challenge for safety and for the operations groups are to recognize those weak points, those areas where we put people in circumstances where maybe anybody in that circumstance would make the same mistake. And so what mitigations do you put in place, whether it be technology, to the extent you want to remove the human from the element as much as possible to not set, I'll use my term, set people up for failure. So those are the kinds of things we're focusing on to try to understand to improve the picture.
Again, I would encourage you with the general managers as well as with Local 689 and the other bargaining units to try and identify where we have broad areas of concern and try and have education programs or retraining programs so we can sort of bring that level of employee injury rate down and get closer to our KPI target.
And that is a reminder. I neglected to give credit to the union because we do have a close partnership with the union, and they've been very helpful in identifying and implementing solutions to drive these numbers down.
Yeah, because I'm sure they have no interest, as we have no interest, in employee injuries and seeing those rates stay at that high level. Mr. Giancola.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the union involvement. It's important. In looking at the OSHA employee injury rate summary, there are several divisions that are actually saw a reduction. So, I mean, it's not like it's through all the divisions. But what struck me as more seriousness is the system maintenance part, which saw the greatest increase of 131%, recognizing it's not as large a division as some of the others. So that, you know, you got to keep that in mind. But one of the notes was the majority of the employees are over 50. Now, is their age an issue? You know, is it related to how old they are and their body's starting to wear out? You know, I'm just thinking along those lines in slips, falls, lifting. And there are lots of videos, as you know, that show proper lifting techniques as well as, again, the awareness of your surroundings and less complacency. So I would kind of look at that, see whether there's an age issue in some of the divisions. That particular one popped out at me, and it was the largest percent increase. Obviously, I can understand the police side and why theirs went up related to some of the issues that they're dealing with. So I just wanted to add that to the conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Brown, I just had a quick question, being one of the new folks here. The targets that you're referring to in your slides, are they Metro's targets? Are they federal targets, industry targets, OSHA targets?
Right. Those are consensus Metro targets. And just to mention, those targets have remained, I believe, are set the same for 2016 as they were for 2015. We tend in the past to try to drive those down when we've achieved those or exceeded those, but I think the consensus was to keep those numbers the same for 2016.
And they would be in line, though, with, well, consensus targets, so yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, just still on the subject of employee safety. Employee behavior is a key part of it, but so is supervision. I really want a question for Paul in terms of your relations down through the chain of command. Are you putting safety performance as a high goal for supervisors?
It is, and I'm actually starting before then. As you may know, we get roughly 50 new employees, you know, every 2 weeks come through our organization. I meet with the group individually, and basically that's the first thing that I tell them. Their most important job is safety, their safety, and the safety of our customers. So I'm trying to start there, and then it's, you know, going through the whole organization that way. But, you know, I've got to work with Lou's shop to come up with, you know, are there other things we can be doing, whether it's more training, whether it's, you know, refresher training, what is it that we can do?
If one facility is not doing as well as others, it's an opportunity to say, is it a management issue?
Or the opposite, if there's people that are doing really well, what are they doing that's a little bit different?
Any other questions, or should we move on to the FTA rulemaking on agency safety plans?
Okay.
Why don't we try and take those two issues together, the agency safety plan rulemaking and the FTA corrective action plans, and or work with them, and then we'll take another round of questions.
Okay. So the agency safety plan FTA rulemaking, there's actually not necessarily an awful lot to be said in that we are in the notice of proposed rulemaking stage with FTA. We have comments that we're preparing that are due by April 5th, and we're working fast and furious to put those together in coordination with the other departments within WMATA. Keep in mind that we already have our system safety program plan that's required by 659 that's in effect right now, and we've been continuing to work towards that. That does have a hazard management section. Probably the only overall comment I would make about the agency safety plan is that it is really doing a deep dive into safety management systems, which has the four components of safety policy, safety risk management, safety assurance, and safety promotion. So that is the direction that the FTA is going, and I fully support that. I think I may have mentioned here that past life that I had was in federal aviation, and I can remember early in my career in the 70s and 80s, we had a lot of transport airplane crashes and fatalities, and FAA, Federal Aviation, went in the direction of safety management systems about 20 years or maybe a little more ago. In the collaboration between the airframe manufacturers, the Boeings and the Airbuses and the airlines and the Federal Aviation Administration, this is just my assessment, the proof's in the pudding, that worked, because we have seen a dramatic decrease in transport airplane fatalities and crashes and injuries. In fact, I think there's been a number of years, and I haven't followed the FAA statistics as much since I left that in 88, but I think we've had a couple years of zero fatalities in transport airplanes. And I credit SMS, so I applaud the FTA for adopting those principles, because they're proven in my mind through the Federal Aviation Administration experience. But we will be commenting on that rulemaking and submitting our comments. Also, just a reminder, at the notice of proposed rulemaking stage, they will be receiving many, many comments from many entities. And having worked in the federal government in the past in rulemaking in various agencies, this can take a long time to resolve all those comments. And then the next step to go before they can go to a final rule is to go to the Office of Management and Budgets and prove the cost-benefit ratio. So it's a rather lengthy process, oftentimes taking a year or more from the time the NPRM comments period closes. But we will be prepared. We're actually going to go ahead and do a based upon what we know now of the agency safety plan proposal, our own, I'll use the term morphing, but adopting our system safety program plan that's required and trying to come up with a draft that we think would address what the intent of the rule is, and we'll be working on that. So we'll be fully prepared when the final rule comes out to move right into that category. And moving on then to the reclassification and the corrective action plans. So just a reminder, the FTA has a public-facing website that is reflected up until recently at the agreed-upon estimated completion dates. There was a change in December with a decision by the FTA. Let me back up. We've had meetings with the FTA since they took over in September and October, and since those were estimated completion dates, and I'm talking specifically about the 91 corrective actions that came from the systems maintenance inspection, we had meetings with them and explained a rationale of why maybe those estimated completion dates needed to be adjusted, and they agreed. We adjusted them. They reflected that in their website up through January, and then had a change of heart and decided, no, maybe it would be better to hold us to the original estimated completion dates, and they changed those dates in their website, which then there was a lot of press that turned our corrective actions red, because they were now not meeting those original estimated completion dates. And keep in mind, the term is estimated completion date, not deadline. And I know there tends to be confusion that these were committed to deadlines, and they were estimated completion dates from the knowledge we had in August and September when we prepared the input for those. But we are working closely with the FTA to resolve those. Those are all tied. The 91 are tied to the first directive, which was 15-1 that came from the FTA, tied to the systems maintenance inspection. Subsequent to that, we had the Tri-State Oversight Committee that we had been working with for a long time, and you all have seen in the past the monthly report that came from the, we call TOC, Tri-State Oversight Corrective Actions. In Directive 16-2, the FTA has wrapped their arms around those corrective actions and adopted those and put those out in a notice, 16-2, in December, with a 30-day response for immediate corrections to the terminology, which we submitted on January 14th, and then another 60 days to submit our complete response, which is now due March 14th. We're on target to do that. Of those, I'll call FTA embraced TOC caps, those total 131. The good news of that is 102 of those, they are essentially accepting as they were from the TOC. So the lion's share of those 131, we're going to continue our process and finalize those and make the submittals to the FTA. The other 29 we're going to put through the process that we used for the SMI, which is a more lengthy process with a multitude of deliverables. But all of that is, the good news is all of that is on target. We're working closely. We have monthly meetings with the FTA. They are fully satisfied. I know Mr. Wiedefeld has also been meeting with Acting Administrator McMillan, and I think we are all on the same page with those. I don't get any sense that we're going crossways. As I mentioned the last slide, the intention of these is that they were guidelines or estimated completion dates, not hard deadlines. And the FTA will rely on the stated deadlines as a measure of compliance. So you will see some of these things turn red because they went back to the original September dates. The last piece, and I think you had asked about this at the last committee meeting, is what is WMATA doing to show actually the progress that's going on? Now keep in mind, for those 91 corrective actions, that actually boils down to about 732 individual action items. And that's not reflected in the FTA website. Of those 732, well, we're making weekly submittals, and I believe the latest number is we've submitted 416 out of those 732. So we're past the halfway mark on submitting action items. But they will not close those corrective actions until every single deliverable that's a subset of those corrective actions has been submitted and approved. So we're not down the road on that piece. The good news story is the week of March 6th, we will go live with in concert with Mr. Wiedefeld's plans that he has to roll out a public website that does demonstrate our progress on these with the FTA for the systems maintenance inspection caps. And I'll entertain any questions.
I'm sorry, so that was March 6th. So our friends at the press can keep you apprised of this and hold you to that?
The week of March 6th, it will go live.
And how will one find that? It'll be on WMATA.com, and it'll be on the first public-facing page for a hyperlink?
That's my understanding. I don't have all the details, but that's my understanding.
All right, we'll be looking for it.
Okay.
Questions, Mr. Downey?
Yeah, questions both on the FTA plan and on the reporting. On the FTA plan, I would not be surprised if they beat the deadline of a year. Does even in a final year of an administration, you can move a few things through, and I think this is very high on the Secretary's agenda, so
okay.
Count on. Potentially we'll see that a little less than a year. Also noting the proposed rule as it's drafted requires that plan be adopted by the board.
Yes.
Which is a change from current practice, and will really mean we'll need to know more about what is in the plan, because it's clearly going to be our plan, and it must be that way if that turns out to be the final rule.
Correct.
On the corrective action plans, we got this week your latest update, and I just want to be sure I understand. As of today, the 222 items that are in there are the entire universe.
That's correct.
There's nothing elsewhere. And as you pointed out earlier, a number of these actually come from our own internal audits. And will those go into this program?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
So as we discover these things, or if the IG reports or other elements come up with things that need correction, they'll move into this process, but they'll move to FTA to be incorporated in there.
Yeah, and it's still, just to clarify the best that I'm speaking on behalf of the FTA, it is an evolving process with the FTA. Mm-hmm. So we haven't totally pinned down for accidents and incidents when we have findings and resulting corrective actions. Mm-hmm. For our own purposes, you'll see them in this report, but whether the FTA will actually issue a directive or something along those lines, they're indicating they would not.
Okay, so then they'll wind up measuring against two different targets, and we'll need to be able to bridge them.
And I will also point out that the FTA had requested that these lists be kept separate. They want to keep track of the SMI separate from the previous TOC caps, I'll call mm-hmm. them. But at the board's request, we have provided a prioritized, based upon hazard risk, consolidated list. And you'll see that SMI caps are grayed so that you can at least see that they sort of jump out at you in the list, but that is contrary to what the FTA had requested.
And with respect to the changing of the dates, given our past history of not meeting dates, I'm looking at things like our IG reports where original dates slip by months or years. I can understand their insistence that if you said you could do it by a given date, that will be the first measure of what's going on. I'm comfortable with that. It does say when you give a first estimate, it better be a good estimate.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Bulger?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks, Mr. Brown. Can we go back to this new website that you mentioned, and could you elaborate on how that's going to look in the public's eye and what the, besides clarifying, what's our intent here, and so everyone understands that we're going to have dueling websites?
No, what this is going to do is basically we've got 732 actions.
Correct.
That we have to do. You know, my focus is not on, the paper trail of this. My focus is on what are we doing to make the system safer. So from my perspective, that's the 732 actions we're taking. So I want to know where we are on each one of those actions, and I want to be transparent with the public of where we are. So we will, in effect, show percentage complete of what we're doing in each one of those. So it's not trying to tie back to all the different things. We have other mechanisms that do that. This is, we are spending, I think we've got almost $50 million that we're applying to these actions. So I want to monitor that, I want to see what that is, and I want to share that with the public so everyone knows where we are. So that's the goal there.
So there's going to be an interlock, though, or interface with some of the FTA.
Pull it back to it, but again, from the operating agency standpoint, we have to do things to improve the safety of the system, and that's what I want to focus on.
Any other questions on the agency safety report or the corrector action plans? All right, Mr. Brown, you're on the hot seat to bring us up to date on the red signal violations.
So just the last status update, which is I had briefed the committee at the customer service on the red signal violation from February 3rd. And since then, we have created a permanent order T1601, which requires assistant superintendents supervising the moves of trains anytime trains are required to move against established direction of traffic. So this supersedes two of our previous SOPs. So you're going to have a much more intensive management oversight of this kind of move that occurred on that date. Such moves are documented now on a form, a newly created form, and signed by both, as we call it, the button and the radio rail controllers, it's the terminology, in addition to the superintendent. So we'll actually have a paper trail when these moves are occurred, which will enable the safe department and others to do an audit and reconstruct that the proper procedures are being followed. And also on a daily basis, the documentation of any reverse moves against the normal established traffic will be added to the Rail Operations Control Center daily incident reports and provided to SAFE and others. And then, as I mentioned, SAFE will audit such moves. Interestingly enough, in investigating this, this is a rather rare move when a train is given permission to move in a reverse direction and doesn't have a preset route for that. And interestingly enough, since February 3rd, no such moves have been required for trains. It was a rather rare event that occurred on that day. One other thing I will mention, and we're rolling it into this, one of the SMI actions that's required, one of the 91, was a finding that radio communications is poor. So that is a very detailed deliverables to work through how train operators and Rail Operations Control Center personnel communicate with one another and the readbacks and those kinds of things. I think that was the extent of my update.
Thank you. Mr. Brown, what I wanted to ask you about is, I guess during the week, the Post ran a story on red light violations, which was very concerning and very alarming. The Post alleges that there were 47 red light violations since the beginning of 2012, according to the Federal Transit Administration. And they further allege in the article that WMATA has more red signal overruns in 2015 than in either of the preceding 2 years. I want to know whether your internal records indicate that those are accurate reports that were in the Post, and if so, what have we been doing about it over the last 3 or 4 years rather than just reacting to what happened at the Smithsonian Station last month?
Okay. So first of all, let me comment on the those kinds of moves. The majority of those incidents occur in rail yards. So the signaling and the automatic train control is different than it is in the main line, the right-of-way, where revenue trains, passenger trains are traveling. A small percentage of those are occurring on the main line. None of these are acceptable, and that's, you know, that's a bottom line. I think Mr. Troop had mentioned that at the last meeting, too. Not a single one is acceptable. That being said, these are low, and I'm not, when I say this, I'm not trying to minimize the importance of this, but most of these, contrary to what I think public perception is, because all of us drive cars and we think of running a red light in an intersection at speed could lead to catastrophe. Not that this can't lead to catastrophe, but the vast majority of these cases are low speed. The operator, as I mentioned, not the norm in most cases. Something is different. They're been required to single track for whatever reason, and they're not doing something that's the normal routine. They're human. And there are procedures in place that you don't apply power to the train. You don't close the train doors. You don't apply power to the train until you get, we call it a lunar, essentially a green light, if you put it in terms. They're not supposed to move the train. They're not supposed to close the doors. We've had a group, the Atticus group, did a study of what's the psychology behind that, what's going on, what's in people's heads. The vast majority of these are some sort of distraction, as I mentioned, a non-normal kind of move that's going on. My concern from the safety department is what circumstances are we putting people in, and what mitigations can we put in place so that if you or I, if we had been fully trained, mm-hmm. and we were in that same spot, that